Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Good afternoon, everyone. Today we will continue with the study of Sutta Nipata. And today I come to the sutta which is called Subhasita Sutta. This is the sutta on good words or good speech. And in the translation, this is on page 50. Okay, this is a sutta which comes in mixed prose and verse. And so here the Buddha addresses the monks and he says that speech which has four characteristics is well-spoken. That is, it's subhasita, well-spoken. It's blameless and not censored by the wise. And here he's speaking specifically about the speech spoken by a monk. So he says it's the speech of a monk who speaks only what is wholesome and not what is unwholesome. Who speaks only what is worthy and not what is unworthy. Who speaks only what is pleasant and not what is unpleasant. Who speaks only what is truthful and not what is untruthful. Speech characterized by these four factors is well-spoken and not ill-spoken, blameless and not censored by the wise. Okay, now in the original, in Pali, this is the way the four characteristics read. For speech to be subhasita, well-spoken, the first characteristic is that it is subhasita, well-spoken, not dubhasita, not badly spoken. That is almost like a redundancy. It's saying for speech to be well-spoken, the first characteristic is that it is well-spoken, not badly spoken. The second is that one speaks on Dhamma, not on what is contrary to Dhamma. That is what is translated here as one speaks only what is worthy, not what is unworthy. The third, one speaks what is piya, not apiya. That means what is pleasant, what is agreeable, not what is unpleasant or disagreeable. And fourth, one speaks satya, not adhikang. That is, one speaks what is truthful, not what is false. Okay, so since we have four characteristics mentioned here, and elsewhere, very often in the suttas, one has four types or four aspects of right speech. What are the four aspects of right speech? The four aspects of right speech are abstaining from falsehood and speaking the truth. Abstaining from divisive speech or slanderous speech. And speaking what brings harmony, what brings people together. One abstains from harsh speech and speaks gently and agreeably. And one abstains from idle chatter and one speaks what is meaningful, what is useful, what is beneficial. Okay, since we have these other four characteristics of right speech, one has to find some way to connect these two sets of four aspects of right speech. And if we look at the four types given in the sutta here, we can make a very clear connection between two of them at once. We have the last one here, one speaks what is truth, what is truthful, not what is untruthful. That goes with the first type of right speech, correct? Then one speaks only what is pleasant, not what is unpleasant. That is correlated with abstaining from harsh speech. One speaks gently. But now we have two other types that are not easy to connect with each other. But the commentary makes this connection. Okay, first, one speaks only what is worthy, not what is unworthy. In the original, one speaks only on the Dhamma, not what is not connected with the Dhamma. So according to the commentary, this means that one abstains from idle chatter and one speaks only what is meaningful. Of course, one of the characteristics, the ways of explaining meaningful speech, is that one speaks on the Dhamma, speaks on the discipline, and one avoids speaking what is useless, what is disconnected from the Dhamma. Okay, so that leaves the first type spoken of in the sutta, which is given here. One speaks only what is wholesome, not what is unwholesome. And so the commentary connects this with one speaks in an agreeable way, in a pleasant way, and one speaks only in a harmonious way, in a way which promotes unity and concord, and one abstains from any type of divisive speech, any kind of speech that creates divisions or conflicts. Okay, so in that way, we can connect the four types of speech, right speech, in the sutta with the usual types of four kinds of right speech that are usually spoken of in the discourses of the Buddha. And so I'm going to elaborate right speech from the standpoint of the usual types of four kinds of right speech. And first, some general words have to be spoken about the importance of right speech in the teaching of the Buddha. Because the Buddha has made right speech a very integral part of his teaching, because he's included it in the Noble Eightfold Path. He's made it the third factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, right after we have right view, right thought, then we come into right speech. Even before right action and right livelihood, the Buddha puts right speech. And so the Buddha gives special attention to speech because it's a very important domain of human activity. And then in the 10 courses of wholesome action, we begin with the three courses of wholesome action of body, abstaining from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct. Then we come into four courses of wholesome action that pertain to speech, followed by the three courses that pertain to mind. The four courses of wholesome karma that pertain to speech, those are the four that I just mentioned. And we could see how important speech is, because the Buddha has included four components under wholesome speech. And so by ascribing such a major role to speech, this is taking account of the fact that speech is such a major domain of human activity. And by speech, we include not only verbal speech, that is speaking that takes place through mouth, but all types of communication, which today would include by writing, communication through other media of information, television, radio, internet, emails, fax machines, every means of communication would be in some way a means of speech. And so if we take what is the most significant domain of human activity, we could say that speech is even more important than action, because it's speech is that particular domain of activity which molds our thinking, our views, our attitudes. We're constantly exposed to information through these different channels, different media. And our whole worldview, our whole way of thinking, all of our relationships are bound up with our communications with others. And so because of this great importance of speech, we have to be very vigilant in giving attention to how we communicate with others. We have to be very careful in being mindful before we speak and being sure that we govern our choice of words before we open our mouths and make statements, before we write letters, write emails, before we communicate anything to others. We have to be sure that we are doing so in conformity with these basic principles of right speech. And that is why it is very useful to become familiar with these four principles of right speech. Don't just listen to them or read them occasionally, but review them, become familiar with them, and imprint them upon the mind so that one can constantly bear them before one's mind when one has to communicate something in speech and writing, and make sure that your speech or written communications are in conformity with these four principles of right speech or right communication. So just to review them first, to be sure that they are truthful, that they are not divisive, but promote unity and harmony, that they are not harsh and bitter, but gentle and agreeable, and to be sure that they are meaningful and beneficial, not just idle chatter. Okay, and now let's examine each one of these in greater detail. Okay, the first principle of right speech is to abstain from falsehood and to speak the truth, that is to abstain from lying. And there are different kinds of lies, different kinds of falsehood, and different degrees of moral gravity, moral blame attached to these different types of falsehood, depending upon the motivation. So in Buddhism, we distinguish three basic roots of unwholesome action. What are these three roots? Greed, hatred, and delusion or ignorance. And so the worst kind of lying, the worst kind of falsehood, would be a falsehood that originates from hatred. Hatred is the heaviest of the three unwholesome roots. And the falsehood becomes extremely heavy when it's a falsehood originating from hatred, intended to destroy somebody else's welfare or to create harm and misery for somebody else based upon hatred and ill will towards that person. Another type of heavy, unwholesome false speech is that which is motivated by greed. That is, when one aims to get some type of benefit for oneself, either to gain wealth for oneself, to enhance one's own reputation, to gain respect or admiration from others, then one tells a lie. Again, that lie. By telling a lie, one creates heavy, unwholesome karma. But even if one tells a lie out of delusion, say, as a joke, or just in exaggerating some story, or just to make an impression on people, even that kind of lie should be avoided. Sometimes the question comes up, what does one do in a situation where there are conflicting circumstances? For example, in a situation where, in order to protect somebody who will be otherwise exposed to harm, if one doesn't tell a lie, that person will be exposed to harm. What should one do in a situation like that? Suppose, to take a very clear example of this, one is in Nazi Germany at the beginning of the period when the Nazis were persecuting the Jews, and one is hiding a Jewish person in one's basement or one's attic, and then the Nazi police come to one's home and ask, did you see such and such Jewish people coming down the street? Now, if one tells them the truth, then these Nazi police, the SS, they will apprehend the Jewish people and take them and bring them to a concentration camp where they will be probably killed. If one tells a lie, then one breaks the precept, but one saves the lives. In a situation like this, what I would say is that when there are conflicting moral dimensions to a situation, one has to choose that line of action which is motivated by the higher moral imperative. And in a situation like this, the higher moral imperative is to protect the lives of innocent people. And so in a situation like that, I would say it's almost unavoidable to tell the lie, to say that, no, I haven't seen the Jewish, these people. But under normal circumstances where there are no such conflicting moral dimensions to a situation, then one should always try to adhere to truth. Okay, what are some of the reasons for this principle of adhering to truth and refraining from false speech under normal circumstances? Okay, one very basic reason is that social cohesion, the harmony of society, of any society, depends upon trust among people in their communications. So if lying becomes habitual, if lying becomes widespread, then the cohesion upon which the functioning of society depends will break down, and the result will be lack of trust amongst people and social chaos. We could see this in societies in which it's taken for granted that people are untrustworthy and one can't believe what anybody says, then there's widespread distrust and almost nothing can be done at any level. Even at the level of government, nobody believes what anybody is saying. And so with such widespread distrust, then even the government cannot function effectively. And so at every level of society, there is complete disharmony, chaos, and confusion. That is why some of these so-called third world countries are not able to develop effectively. I have to say I've experienced this myself a number of years in Sri Lanka, where lying becomes very, very widespread, and there's so much distrust in that society. And so it's when truthfulness is regarded as a sacred virtue that communications are regarded as reliable, and that is what serves as a basis for the cohesion, the harmony, and the effective functioning of society. And this also is a reason why it becomes a great responsibility of those at the head of government to speak the truth and to show that they are devoted and committed to uphold the truth. When those in positions of leadership repeatedly lie and almost unabashedly lie and then just use the man that they present to their press secretary to make all sorts of excuses and pretexts for them, then nobody believes them, nobody accepts what they say, and then people at lower levels of government will not have any hesitation about lying, and then one cannot expect people at lower levels in society to have any hesitation to lie. In this way, communication just breaks down. Okay, another important reason to refrain from lying in our own personal lives is because lies tend to proliferate. That is, if one tells a lie in order to protect oneself, to defend oneself from something wrong that one has done, then what often happens, and I found this in the past myself before I became a monk, in order to protect oneself, one has to tell another lie to prevent that lie, the first lie, from being found out. Then because one is told a second lie, then one becomes vulnerable on two fronts. So then one has to tell a third lie to protect the second lie. Then one now is vulnerable on three fronts, and so one has to tell a third lie, fourth lie, fifth lie, until before long one finds that one is just entangled in a whole net of lies, just weaving one lie after another lie after another lie, in order to protect oneself so that one won't be found out. And then as one is telling so many lies, one becomes always anxious, always worry that somebody is going to find one out. And eventually somebody will find one out. And then once one is discovered to be a liar, then other people will not place trust in you. And you lose the confidence of others, and others feel that you're a person that's unworthy of trust. And you become almost a pariah in your society. In contrast, when you become known as a person whose word is trustworthy, whose word is truthful, then other people will always place confidence in your word, and they will place trust in you and regard you as a reliable person. And that gives you a feeling of self-confidence and self-worth, and gives you a feeling of inner protection so that you don't have to worry whatever might happen to you externally, as long as you are upholding truth and committed to truth, you have this feeling of inner strength, inner protection that remains with you. Another reason, the third reason for this emphasis on adhering to truthful speech is that we can say that truthful speech in relation to communication is the parallel to wisdom in the domain of knowledge. That is, in the domain of knowledge or understanding, it's wisdom that enables us to know and to understand things as they really are. And so truthful speech, in a similar way, implies a commitment to things as they really are. It means a commitment to communicate things the way they really are. A commitment to represent things to others as they really are. So when in our speech we make that commitment to represent things as they really are, this impresses upon the mind that same kind of quality that will also ripen in our attempts to understand things in the blossoming of wisdom. This is why in the Theravada tradition, truthful speech is made one of the 10 paramitas that a bodhisattva has to practice to achieve supreme enlightenment. Through life after life, the bodhisattva always practices truthful speech, and that truthful speech becomes one of the perfections that ripens or blossoms in his attainment of the supreme enlightenment of Buddhahood, which is the perfect understanding of the nature of reality. Okay, the second type of right speech is abstaining from divisive speech. In Pali, this is called pisuna vacha. I think in Chinese, this is ershihua, two-tongue speech, ershihua. Isn't it? Ershihua? Liangshihua? Liangshihua, okay. Two-tongue speech, liangshihua, okay. Okay, so what is meant by this divisive speech? This is speech, a case of speech where you hear something in one place about a certain group of people, certain person or group of people. Then you go to somebody else or another group of people and you report it to them with the intention to create divisions or conflict between person A and person B, or between the people in group A and the people in group B. So this is why we can call this divisive speech, or sometimes it's translated malicious speech. This indicates the motivation behind this type of speech. The motivation is malice or ill will. The intention is to create enmity and divisions between people who might be on friendly and harmonious terms. One of the famous examples of this that comes down in the Buddhist texts is the case of a monk named Kokalya, who came to the Buddha, and he told the Buddha that Sariputta and Moggallana are evil-minded monks, and he tried to persuade the Buddha to eject or expel Sariputta and Moggallana. But Sariputta and Moggallana were, of course, the chief disciples of the Buddha. And the Buddha knew Sariputta and Moggallana perfectly well. But this monk Kokalya had evil desires. He wanted to get close to the Buddha, and he was trying to create divisions between the Buddha and Sariputta and Moggallana. And the Buddha gave warnings to Kokalya and told him, "Do not speak in that way, do not speak in that way. Sariputta and Moggallana are excellent monks, wonderful monks. You should become friends with Sariputta and Moggallana. You should develop a friendly mind towards Sariputta and Moggallana." But Kokalya kept on coming to the Buddha and giving these bad reports about Sariputta and Moggallana, until eventually Kokalya, because he was creating such bad karma through the slandering of Sariputta and Moggallana, he developed this terrible illness. These boils appeared on his body, which kept on getting bigger and bigger and bigger until they burst, and then he died from that illness. Okay, so the opposite of this divisive speech is speech which is intended to promote friendship and harmony between others. The Buddha says about a disciple who is practicing this type of right speech that he is one who delights in harmony, who rejoices in harmony, and speaks words that promote harmony. So when you see people who might be in a state of conflict, in a state of discord, then what one should do is try to bring them together by speaking words that will unite them. If people have had some fight, some disagreement, then you try to bring them together and reestablish a friendship between them. If you see A and B have had some disagreement, you tell A about the good qualities of B, and you tell B about the good qualities of A, and try to settle their differences, bring them together again, so that they become friends again. Okay, the third type of right speech is avoiding harsh speech. This is any kind of sharp, bitter, angry, or rough speech, and instead speaking gently, speaking in soft, soothing, and agreeable ways. And so, the opposite of this soft and agreeable speech, there are different types, different aspects of harsh speech, and we have to be aware of them, otherwise we can fall into them without being aware of it. The most obvious kind of harsh speech is simple angry speech, where we get angry at somebody and then we just speak at them, yell at them, shout at them. And that is can be extremely unpleasant, very painful to them. But there are other types of harsh speech that might not be so obvious. One is called abusive speech. This is where we speak to somebody in words that cut them down by ascribing various bad qualities to them. Instead of just yelling at them, we start ascribing different bad qualities to them. Another type of harsh speech is insulting speech. Again, where we insult them by ascribing different labels to them, which make them feel insulted. And then a third type of harsh speech is sarcasm, where you seem to be praising the person, but you do it with such a tone that it's obvious to that person that your intention is to humiliate them and make them feel unhappy and miserable. Like if somebody is doing some work, you've requested them to do some work for you, and you see that they've done a bad job, you say to them, "That's a great job you've done." But you say it with such a tone that they realize that you're criticizing them. You say, "That's a great job. Let me come in and show you how it should be done." And then they feel so upset. Okay, and so to get control of a hot speech, what one needs is patience. And if one is patient, it doesn't mean that one always has to speak to others softly and gently. But sometimes one has to speak to others in ways that can be stern and even upsetting. But one has to do so with the right motivation, with the right frame of mind. Because sometimes to get people to act properly, one has to speak to them a little bit sternly, a little bit roughly. But if one has the right motivation, if one understands the people and speaks to them in a way intended to motivate them properly, then one can speak to them sternly, strongly, but because the motivation is a right one, even if they feel upset, then one knows that one is intending to benefit them and to help them, and one is using this stern, abrupt speech as a way to motivate them to behave properly. Sometimes if one is too soft and gentle in one's speech, then people won't act effectively. But if one has a disposition or a tendency towards harsh and angry speech, it's best to train oneself always to speak softly and gently, not try to give oneself excuses for speaking sternly to others and telling oneself that one has reached the point where one could speak sternly to others as a way of motivating them to act properly. Okay, and then the fourth type of right speech, and that is to avoid idle chatter and to speak what is meaningful and beneficial. And this, I think, in the context of day-to-day life, should be understood to mean to avoid just gossip and talk which takes one away into areas that stir up unwholesome tendencies in the mind. And I want to mention one special application of this, which is especially relevant in today's world. It doesn't mean, as I would understand this, it doesn't mean only to avoid speaking such idle chatter oneself, but also one should avoid exposing oneself to too much idle chatter coming from things like television, radio, movies, internet entertainment, all of this inflow of needless information, excess information, excess entertainment, which just can be amusing, entertaining, enjoyable, but is not really beneficial, which takes up a lot of time, which is wasting the valuable time, one's valuable time as a human being, and doesn't allow you to use your time profitably for the true benefit of this precious human existence. Okay, now I want to come back to the sutta itself. Okay, after the Buddha enumerated the four types of well-spoken speech, then he rephrased or he reformulated the same idea in verse. This is verse 450. I won't recite the verse. It's basically just the same points put in meter. Then there was a monk named Vangisa. This monk Vangisa was the foremost poet in the early Buddha Sangha. And very often, when the Buddha was teaching in the Sangha, ideas would come into Vangisa's mind in the form of verses. And then he would tell the Buddha, "Bhante, Bhante, a verse is occurring to me." And then the Buddha would say, "Vangisa, recite the verse." And then the Vangisa would stand up, and then he would recite the verse that's occurred to him. And so there's a whole chapter in the Samyutta Nikaya of verses that are spoken by this monk Vangisa. And he also has a whole section in the work called the Theragata, the verses of the elder monks, of verses spoken by him. Okay, so on this occasion, also Vangisa stands up, rearranges his robe, and tells the Buddha that a verse is occurring to him, and he asks for permission to speak. Okay, so the Buddha asks him to recite his verse, and then he recites some verses in which he rephrases the idea or re-expresses the idea of well-spoken speech. I would translate his words a little differently from the way they're translated here. He says, the way I would translate it, "One should utter only such speech by which one does not cause affliction to oneself and by which one does not bring any harm to others. That is well spoken speech." Okay, so this is sort of a general characteristic of well spoken speech. It's speech which doesn't bring any harm to oneself or any harm to others. Then he goes on to elaborate more characteristics of well-spoken speech. He says, "One should utter only pleasant speech, speech that is gladly welcomed." That's translated here, where the words make people glad. "When it brings them nothing evil, what one speaks is pleasant to others." So that is the characteristic of pleasant speech. It doesn't bring evil or harm to others. Then Vangisa goes to a more profound level. In the next verse, he says, "Truth indeed is deathless speech. This is an ancient principle." Here the translator has, "The words of truth are immortal. This is an eternal nature." And now follow the translation here. "And good people, they say, are well grounded in truth, in welfare, or in the good, and in the Dhamma." Then the last verse. the speech or the words that the word that the Buddha speaks that leads to security, to nibbana, to putting an end to suffering, that indeed is the highest of speech. Okay, so with this, with these verses, the monk Vanghisa is going beyond just the types of good speech or right speech spoken of by the Buddha, and he's creating a kind of hierarchy of types of good speech, at the top of which he's putting the speech spoken by the Buddha, which doesn't merely conform to the minimal requirements of right speech, but establishes as the topmost or foremost type of right speech, the speech spoken by the Buddha, which leads to the ultimate goal, that is to nibbana, which is the supreme security and the cessation or extinction of suffering. Okay, let that be my talk for this afternoon, and I thank you all for your attention. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you all. Okay, let us share the merits. Okay, we think of the Devas, the Nagas, the Buddhas, the spirits, and all other beings, and we share the merits with them, wishing that they might all be well, happy, and peaceful. Akasata jabumata deva naga mahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu sasanam. Akasata jabumata deva naga mahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu desanam. Akasata jabumata deva naga mahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu mang parang. Etavata caam hehi sampadang punya sampadang. Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. Etavata caam hehi sampadang punya sampadang. Sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. Etavata caam hehi sampadang punya sampadang. Sabbe sata anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya.